My name is Pearl, and I'm extremely good looking, and my husband loves me because of that. I love living in the desert, even though we barely got any rain outside of monsoon season in August. The vast majority of our rain came during that 1 month, and we had to make sure that our sprawling acreage didn't flood. Last August, Jim went out to check if our trench had been blocked. It seemed like there was more water in the yard than usual. He said he was going out to take a look, that it would be 10 minutes, tops, but he never came back. I waited for about 20 minutes before I went outside to check on him. It was pouring rain, and I had to trudge through water up to my ankles. I looked around our backyard and didn't see him. I went all the way to the trench that ran across the back of our property. It funneled the excess water into a little reservoir, and the water was running pretty fast. He wasn't there. I went back inside and called the police. I can't tell you how panicked I was. Because of the rain, the police couldn't get there until about half an hour after I called. They had three men walk around the property looking for Jim. They didn't see any signs that he was even ever there. They walked to the back of the house, dripping wet, and gave me the bad news. Jim was still missing. He gave me a number to call and then left. I guess I was in shock because I let them leave without arguing. I stayed inside, silently praying that I would see Jim again. Eventually, day turned into night, and the rain got even worse. I was sitting on the couch, crying and praying. I felt completely hopeless. Then, I heard a soft knock at the back door. It was barely audible over the rain, and I didn't know if it was just a fallen tree branch or something, but I couldn't ignore it. I pulled on my shoes and walked to the back door. I looked around, but I didn't see Jim. I started to think that the noise was just in my head. And then, I noticed a figure in the distance. It looked like Jim was standing at the far corner of our property, just past the trench. "Jim?" I shouted into the wind. The figure didn't move. There was a flash of lightning, and I got a better look at the figure. Yes. It was definitely Jim. But what was he doing? I raced across the yard, wading through knee-deep water, until I made it to the trench. Jim was standing on the other side with the rushing water between us. "Honey," he said, "I'm trapped. Please help me." He didn't seem trapped. He could walk along the edge of the trench and enter our property from the side, but he wasn't moving. Instead, he reached his hand toward me, as if he wanted me to help him jump across the rushing water. "It's not safe," I told him. "You have to go around." "Please," he said. "I need your help." His arm was still extended. Despite how dangerous the trench was, it was only about 3 feet wide. With my help, he could jump over. So even though I knew it was safer to go across, I did what he wanted. I reached forward and grabbed his arm. "Okay," I said. "You can jump." He didn't. Instead, he squeezed my wrist really tight and pulled. It happened so fast, I didn't know what was going on. It was only after I fell into the rushing water that I realized that he wanted me to fall. I felt my body slam against the side of the trench as I was caught up in the water. Everything was dark. Intense pain seared through me as a fallen branch scratched against my sides. My head collided with the concrete. I wanted to scream, but I couldn't underwater. If I opened my mouth, I would choke. Not knowing what to do, I just let the current take me. My body was pushed further and further down the stream until I was shot into the churning reservoir. I desperately paddled to the surface, gasping for air, before the water pulled me back down. I was so close to drowning, but I grabbed onto a tree trunk at the edge of the water to steady myself. With all my strength, I pulled myself out of the muddy reservoir. I was bleeding, bruised, and covered in mud. I couldn't see out of one of my eyes, and I didn't know if it was covered in mud or if it had been swollen shut. Slowly, I limped back towards the house. When I got to the front of our property, I saw the same police car parked outside. The three cops that had helped me earlier were sitting on the porch with Jim. He was wrapped in a blanket, talking to them. No one noticed me. I guess she thought I had fallen into the trench, I heard him tell the police. She was out there looking for me, but when I went to go get her, she fell in and drowned. He kept talking, but I couldn't make out his words because he was crying so hard. One of the cops patted him on the shoulder. It's okay, he said. I'm sure we'll find her body. I couldn't believe it. Jim was never missing. He had this all set up so he could drown me and pretend it was an accident. He used the monsoon as both his alibi and his murder weapon. I don't know what I'm going to do without her, he wailed. Now all three cops were trying to comfort him. I felt sick to my stomach. I couldn't watch this anymore. I thought Jim and I loved each other. I guess I was wrong. I stepped forward and loudly cleared my throat. All three cops looked at me in shock. Slowly, Jim turned his head around and saw me standing there, wounded, but very much alive. Well, shit, he said. Needless to say, Jim and I aren't married anymore. He's awaiting trial for attempted murder. And after that storm, it hasn't rained since.
My name is Danielle. When I was growing up, I was really close to my older sister, Tori. But then she went to college in Switzerland, and I barely heard from her. Because she was living abroad, the only way we could communicate was through WhatsApp. None of my friends in America had WhatsApp, so I only used it for Tori. I thought it was going to be a temporary thing until she graduated, but then she decided to stay in Europe. She became an ESL teacher, working in Romania, and then Poland, and then Greece. She loved her life and had no intention of moving back to America. I barely left my hometown, and just didn't understand my sister's wanderlust. Over time, we slowly grew apart. We still messaged each other, but our voice calls became less and less frequent. We simply didn't have anything to talk about anymore. Just over a year ago, she messaged me that she had decided to move to Moldova, which was a tiny country in Eastern Europe that I'd never heard of before. I checked the American Embassy website, and it seemed like a pretty dangerous place for foreigners. Unlike the other countries she'd been to, Moldova had a bunch of travel warnings for America. For the first time, I got a little nervous about my sister's travels. I tried to call her to talk her out of the move, but she wouldn't answer. So I texted her a long WhatsApp message explaining that I missed her and that I was really worried. She sent me a one-sentence response. Don't meddle with my life. After that, I didn't hear from her for months. I sent her occasional messages to check in, but she never responded. And then, about 3 months ago, she finally wrote me back. She sounded surprisingly friendly, as if the last few months of radio silence had never happened. She told me about how great her life was. She talked about her job and her new friends. I was so happy that she'd gotten over her anger. It seemed like she missed me just as much as I'd missed her. I tried to do a voice call, but she said that the Wi-Fi was so bad in Moldova that the calls wouldn't go through. So we stuck to texting. For the next few weeks, Tori and I texted back and forth, almost constantly. I had never felt so close to her. She was telling me all sorts of wild stories, and she made Moldova seem like a very fun place. Then one day, she forwarded me a plane ticket to come visit her. She said that she wanted me to stay at her place for 2 weeks, and she'd pay for everything. Even though I had my passport, I'd never left the country before. I just didn't really have the desire to travel, and even though Tori seemed happy in Moldova, I wasn't sure that I wanted to go. But over WhatsApp, Tori kept pressuring me. She sent me photos of all the places that she'd take me to. I knew I needed to reconnect with my sister, so I ignored my nervousness and agreed to go. I took 2 weeks off from work and checked all the visa requirements. It's different now, but back then, Americans visiting Moldova could get a visa on arrival if their stay was under 30 days. There was nothing I needed to do besides pack. In early June, I flew to Chisinau, the capital city. It was a small, grimy airport, and the immigration guy seemed surprised that I was traveling there alone. In broken English, he asked me a few questions about my reasons for traveling. I told him that I was going to be staying with my sister the entire time I was there. He gave me a long look and said, "Good luck. Be safe." After that, I messaged Tori that I'd arrived. Before, she told me that she'd meet me at the airport, but now her response was, "Great, my friend Vlad will pick you up." Then she sent me a photo of Vlad's beat-up Soviet-era car, which was already waiting for me in the parking lot. This made me nervous. I tried to call Tori directly, surprised by how fast the Wi-Fi was at the airport. From what Tori had said, the whole country had spotty Wi-Fi. But that didn't seem right. Everyone I saw in the airport had smartphones, and most people were scrolling through their phones without any problem. Tori didn't answer my call. She just texted me to find Vlad. She said I could trust him. So I walked through the parking lot until I found the right car. Vlad was waiting in the driver's seat. I couldn't see him clearly, but he looked short and greasy. He smiled at me when I approached, and I instantly distrusted him. I thought about turning around and going back to the airport, but I knew that was overreacting. Vlad stepped out of his car and shoved my luggage in the trunk. Then he told me to get in the passenger seat. He didn't even say hello. I got in, and we drove out of the parking lot in silence. He kept glancing over at me, but he wouldn't say anything. I tried to ask him some questions, but he just smiled and laughed. I figured he didn't speak English. We drove through the city for much longer than I'd expected. Eventually, the buildings began to thin out, and I realized that he was taking me to the countryside. My heart pounded in my chest. I tried to call my sister again. At first, she didn't answer. Then I heard a phone ringing in the glove compartment. Horrified, I realized that Tori's phone was in Vlad's car the whole time. I glanced over at him, and he ignored me. I could feel the car speed up. I opened the glove compartment and found Tori's ringing phone. "It took you long enough to figure it out," Vlad said in perfect English. "What's going on?" As he drove faster and faster into the countryside, he told me that he had special plans for me, just like my sister. I didn't understand what was going on. Where was he taking me? What had he done to Tori? I had so many questions. I asked him, "How long have you had my sister's phone?"
"Since the day she arrived," he said.
I let those words sink in. All this time, I wasn't texting Tori. I was texting this psycho pretending to be Tori. "Where is she?" I demanded.
"You'll find out soon enough."
We were on a long straight highway with empty fields on either side. We hadn't passed another building in miles. I knew I had to find a way to escape. In a panic, I did the only thing I could think of. While he was still driving, I yanked on the parking brake. The car slowed down a bit, but not by a lot. Then I opened the door and jumped out. My body slammed against the dirt ground, gravel and rocks tearing into my skin. I knew my arm was broken. One of my legs probably was too. I'd never felt more intense pain, but at least I was out of Vlad's car. I saw the car slow down and then make a U-turn. He was coming back to get me. But as he turned, another car was driving in the opposite lane. With my left arm, the one that wasn't broken, I waved for help. The car slammed to a stop right next to me, and a large hairy man rushed out of the driver's seat to see if I was okay. As soon as he got out, Vlad's car turned back around and sped away. The man talked to me in a language I didn't understand, and then carried me into his back seat. He drove me back toward a hospital in the city. After the doctor sewed me up and gave me a cast, the local police came to ask me what had happened. I told them the whole story, and they didn't look surprised. I guess this kind of thing happened a lot in Moldova.
"You're very lucky," one policeman told me, even though I had four broken bones and needed a skin graft.
"Will you look for my sister?" I asked him.
"We'll try," he said. "But I don't think she's still alive."
I spent weeks recovering in the hospital, overstaying my visa and having to pay a bunch of fines. I'm back home now, feeling a lot better, but still having to use a cane. I know that Tori is gone forever. I miss her so much, and the worst part is, I still don't know what Vlad had done to her.
It was dark before dusk, a type of darkness that introduced blistering lightning across the sky. Thunderous booms like the voice of God had finally ended in a downpour. When I was much younger, I had lived for such nights because it meant that I was going to have a cozy night resting, tucked in the warmth of the shelter around me, But as a grown-up, it was an inconvenience at best and an irritation at worst, especially on nights when I had planned for activities. Becky was the first to call my attention to the rain, and she canceled. It felt like a dagger to my chest, because I had planned for the evening to such detail that it felt like I had a mouthful of salt when the call dropped. "I'm sorry, Emily. Roads are usually slippery after the downpour, and I can't come," she said. The call dropped before I could negotiate some other means to get her to come. I felt so much dejection from that call with Becky that I didn't even feel like setting dinner up anymore for Sarah and myself. The odds that Sarah would cancel were high, so I didn't have my hopes up, and I didn't hear anything until late into the night. I tossed everything back into the freezer and set the house back to its original state before the evening. Then I tried to sleep, but it eluded me. It was the worst because it felt like torture that I could not escape. To be in such a big house and to be so lonely as it rained. "God damn it," I cussed and picked myself up from the bed when I had enough of feeling pity for myself over the incident. I carried myself from the bed and with a mind aimed at nowhere, I grabbed my keys from the counter and stepped out of the house for a drive. I hopped into my car, not knowing what the heavy downpour had for me, except for the fact that my mind was fogged with the loneliness, and I needed temporary escape from it. I was numb to the car engine revving with such animation, and when I put the car in drive out into the street, it was a blur until I caught something just within my lane of driving down the road. "Damn you!" I yelled as I swerved the car sideways, pulling on the wheel as hard as I could. The tires squealed on the wet tar, and the car drifted until it finally stopped when I slammed the brakes. The first emotion I felt was intense annoyance, carried over the disappointment of friends not showing up to a sleepover that I had organized. I was so overcome by rage that I wasn't thinking clearly when I stepped out of the car into the rain. The downpour felt like pellets on my skin. Still, I marched on until I was beside the person on the floor. He laid still, draped in a jacket that was drenched. My anger waned when I was curious. I wondered why anyone would be out in the open like this, laying down in the rain as he was. I assessed him before making a move on tapping him in the shoulder. "Hey, mister, are you okay?" I touched him, and he was stiff to the touch. My brows compressed in confusion. I tugged him on the shoulder, and he turned to lay flat on the floor, as white as snow from being beaten by the rain. In an instant, I could tell what was wrong. His throat was slashed, and the marks were as sinister as my worst nightmare. He had been so drained of blood, his skin patched. My body shook from the horror of what I saw. Fear was rapid, and it numbed me to my senses. Instinct kicked in, and all I could think of was escape from whatever this was, or whatever it was that killed him and slashed his throat. I stepped away from him, watching as the rain beat down on his dead body and washed the blood away from the crime. When I was a few feet away from him, I turned, and just beside my car was a figure cloaked in the darkness, emerging with a smile on his lips.
"Christ in heaven, what are you?"
I cried as I backed up from the approaching figure. "Nobody. That is what I am," he said. Then he went on to ask me what I thought about the rain, all the while insulting me by calling me a stupid pig. He said that I could have gone in my way and we would have never crossed paths. He said it with a casualness that informed me that he was not just a regular murderer with an appetite for violence. I was dealing with a killer who had a crazed lust for it, just as one would have for food or a thirsty throat would long for water. "Two pigs in one night. You have no escape and you know it," he said as he basked in the rainy downpour, covered in the darkness of night. "You know one thing about water? It washes away all dirt, including you." I turned and ran as fast as my feet would carry me. I felt every moment of my life roll into a reel that flashed before my eyes. tears from my eyes flowed with the rain as it washed it away. It was a difficult thing to run away from death that so eagerly wished to consume me. I found my feet suddenly weary to carry me all the way home. It was a blur, and I lost all my senses, but for that one directional compass. The terror of my night, the one whose face I hadn't seen, chased after me so intensely that I fell on my face on the walkway. "Please," I begged, beyond all wit's end and desperate to live. My pleas were loud, but the rain drowned me out. It was hopeless with each breath that I drew into my lungs. I felt a curtain close around me. The things that mattered half an hour ago did not matter when I finally saw his face. His eyes were gray and deep, sunken into his bony face. His hands bore a cleaver, and he laughed hysterically as he ambled towards me. "He begged more than you did, that little pig," he cried as I slit his throat. "I had to taste some of his blood, you know. Feel his fear," he whispered as he finally settled to take his prize. A rocking shot sent shockwaves through my chest. I watched him stagger, disbelief making my head spin. The bullet wound in the middle of his head dripped blood, which the rain washed away. He tumbled over and fell as I gasped. "Emily, are you okay?" Sarah called out, and I had never been more happy to see my friend. I rushed up and fell straight into Sarah's arms with relief. "He killed someone. He was going to kill me," I blubbered. "I'll call the cops," Sarah said. "Then we'll get to your car. Let's get out of the rain."
It started with a simple update. I got a notification on my phone telling me that my WhatsApp application wasn't up to date and needed updating to the latest version before I could continue using it. Thinking nothing of it, I went ahead and accepted, letting it update while my phone was on charge. I didn't bother checking the new settings or privacy terms, assuming nothing much would have changed except for a few bug fixes or added features. A couple of days after I had updated the app, I was sitting at home, scrolling through social media when I got a new WhatsApp message. It was from an unknown number. I was very careful about who I handed my number out to, especially businesses who might sell it off, so I rarely received calls or messages from unknown IDs, especially on WhatsApp, which is why I thought it was odd. I pulled up the app on my phone and checked the message. As expected, it was just spam, some company trying to rope me into clicking on a link I definitely shouldn't click on. I deleted the message immediately and thought nothing else of it, though I did find myself wondering where they could have gotten my number from, given the precautions I normally took. That wasn't the last message I received from an unknown source. Later that afternoon, my phone pinged with another one, this time from a different unknown number. Another spam message that went straight into the deleted folder. I tried to ignore it and assume it was just an annoying coincidence, but it bothered me that WhatsApp's privacy settings must have become more lenient as to who they let contact me against my wishes. I checked my settings but couldn't see an option to prevent unknown numbers from contacting me, so I simply hoped that that was the last of it. Over the next few days, however, my phone kept getting spammed with scam messages and links from contacts I'd never heard of, and it became obvious my number had been sold off to these companies. The only thing that had changed recently was the WhatsApp update, something I now seriously regretted agreeing to. I was annoyed, but there wasn't a lot I could do without deleting the app altogether, which I wanted to avoid since it was the only way I could keep in contact with some people. About a week after the update, I received a message unlike any of the others that had slipped into my inbox. It was another unknown number, but the message itself wasn't a business scam like the rest. It was one of those chain messages that I remembered seeing a lot back in high school. Kids messing around and pretending to spread curses and misfortune if you didn't forward a certain message to a certain number of people. If you don't send this message to 5 people in 5 days, the Twisted Man will get you. But that wasn't all. There was a picture too. When I first read the message, it hadn't loaded properly and came up as nothing but a blurred image of nothing. Then it loaded, and I almost dropped the phone. It was an image of a man, although creature might have been a more apt description, since nothing about it was completely human. Pale, waxen skin and deep-hooded eyes that seemed more like two polished pieces of coal. Its mouth was an open slit, the lips white and bloodless. But it wasn't the face that scared me so much as its body. The way it was twisted like that, with its loose skin and sinewy muscle, its crooked neck and long, dangly limbs that reminded me far too much of an arachnid. I hastily clicked away from the message and the picture, feeling nausea grip my stomach. Now I was getting jump-scared in a text? What the hell was wrong with the people these days? What if I'd been a kid? Opening a message like that would have given me nightmares for years, probably. Curling my lip in annoyance, I deleted the message. It was nonsense anyway. The twisted man was just someone's Photoshop creation designed to scare and trick people. That's all chain messages did, prey on people's ignorance and naivety. I put the phone down and went about the rest of my day trying to get that horrible picture out of my head. Only I couldn't. Every time I closed my eyes, I would glimpse that dark gaze and twisted body, like it was skulking around in the shadows of my mind. I forced myself to think of something else, but I could still feel it there, just lingering out of sight. I knew I was being silly and paranoid, but nothing I did would get that image out of my head. It was like my own brain was trying to torture me with the creepiness of it. By the time the sky outside had begun to darken, I was already starting to forget about the chain message and the image of the twisted man. I sat down in the living room and reached for the television remote, hoping to relax with some program. In the split second before the TV screen flickered to life, I glimpsed something standing behind me in the reflection. Something with deep, hooded eyes and a twisted body. With a start, I staggered to my feet and turned around, expecting to see the twisted man standing behind me, like it had in the reflection. But there was nothing there. My heart thundered in my chest, the sound of my own pulse drowning out the noise from the television. What the hell? Had I just imagined that? I must have. There was no way the twisted man had actually been standing behind me because it wasn't real. It was just some stupid prank. If you don't send this message to 5 people in 5 days, the twisted man will get you. The message flashed up in my mind again, but I just as quickly dismissed it. It wasn't real. So why was I getting so hung up over it? When my heart had finally calmed down again, I checked behind the sofa and the rest of the house, just to be sure. But there really was nothing, or nobody there. It was all in my head. Even knowing that, however, wasn't enough to get it out of my head. When I went to sleep that night, I kept waking up thinking that the twisted man was somewhere in my room watching me sleep. Which I knew was impossible and made no sense, but it was a feeling I couldn't seem to shake off, no matter what I did. At one point, when I awoke in the early hours and the room was still dark, I thought I glimpsed a shadow standing, 2 coal black eyes watching me. But when I turned my light on to check, there was nothing there at all. 3 days after I received the chain message, things got a bit too much. I was in the bathroom one night, brushing my teeth before I went to bed. I bent down to spit and rinse my mouth, and when I stood back up again, I saw something in the mirror. It was a sticky note with a picture of the twisted man. It read, "If you don't send the message to 5 people, the twisted man will get you." My whole body started to shake with fear. I was too scared to even leave the bathroom for a good 10 minutes. It was all real, and I had less than 2 days before he came for me. Even though my brain knew the twisted man couldn't be real, the fear that I felt was. I mean, someone was definitely behind this twisted man shit, and they knew where I lived. I couldn't keep going on like this, terrified that the twisted man would be lurking around every corner, waiting for me. When I finally worked up the courage to leave the bathroom, I grabbed my phone where I'd left it on my bed and forwarded that stupid message to 5 of my close friends. Then I put the phone down and let out a heavy sigh of relief, feeling like a burden had been lifted from my shoulders. After that, I never encountered anything strange. Though, every so often, I still dreamt about him and wondered what might have happened if I didn't forward that message.